Welcome to Pop Culture Happy Hour, our roundtable podcast about what we are watching, reading, and listening to. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. On this week's show, we're in the thick of awards season with the Grammys right around the corner and the Oscars not far behind. So we're taking a step back to ask what awards shows are for and what they should be for. Can they ever really honor the best? And if not, can they at least help us catch a good performance or find a good movie? And in our second segment, we'll talk about how brands wiggle their way into entertainment and whether it matters what beer you put in your song. And as always, we'll close the show with what's making us happy this week. So stick around.
Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour. Check out NPR's Bullseye with Jesse Thorne, an excellent guide to what's good in pop culture. Every week, Jesse Thorne interviews people like Elvis Costello, Elizabeth Banks, and Spike Lee about their creative work and lives. Find your new favorite TV shows, books, movies, and music, and gain new insights into the things you already love. Find Bullseye now at npr.org/podcasts and on the NPR One app.
We're talking statuettes and well-placed products this week, but before we get started here in historic Studio 44, let's go around the table. Stephen Thompson, what do you do at NPR?
I am a writer and editor with NPR Music.
And Glenn Weldon, what do you do at NPR?
I write about books and comic books for the NPR website.
And it's a very exciting week for us. We are bringing you a brand new voice in the fourth chair. Alex Kappelman, what do you do?
I make a podcast called Pitch.
Well, as Alex mentioned, in the rest of his normal life, he makes a podcast that is about music. I don't know if you mentioned it was about music, but it is. So we thought he would be the perfect person to help us get our metaphorical arms around the Grammy Awards. But I want to go to Stephen first because I want him to help explain the history that we have of being frustrated by the Grammy Awards. So can you talk a little bit about our history with the Grammy Awards, Stephen?
Yeah, you and I have been covering the Grammys for what I'm assuming is about 35 years. I've lost a little bit of track. And over the years, we're always trying to find new ways to cover them. There's only so much you can do with awards shows. They seem to roll around about every 2 months. And do we tweet them? Do we do a printed chat during them? Do we do podcasts about them? And it's always tricky to kind of find new angles on them, new ways to cover them, and find new ways to talk about what is essentially a collection of performances in which they give away something like 8 statuettes over the course of
I think the Grammys are technically 3.5 hours. Mm-hmm. So when we first started talking about the Grammys, one of the things I said about bringing Alex in is I said, my guess is does not care about the Grammy Awards, particularly in terms of who wins the Grammy Awards. Right. Is that accurate?
No, I actually do care about the Grammy Awards.
Oh, yeah?
Let me take you to Kendrick Lamar.
Yes, sounds good.
Rather than myself. I think they're important because for an artist like Kendrick Lamar, who's nominated for 11 Grammys this year, they're important to him. He told the Times that, it's really huge, and I'm paraphrasing here, that's really huge for the hip-hop community. Like, to be recognized by an institution like the Grammys, like someone in the past, Nas or Tupac, like people who haven't been historically recognized by Grammys, like it's important for him and the hip-hop community to be recognized.
Right. And we talked a year ago at this time. I think it was two years ago. We did a show with Gene Demby, and we talked about it was the year that Macklemore won all of the rap awards.
Swept Kendrick Lamar. Kendrick Lamar went, I think, 0-for-4 against Macklemore.
And we talked about the fact that the Grammy, particularly in rap, that the Grammy Awards have this long history of, early winners included,
parents just don't understand.
It was not
Will Smith has won a lot of hip-hop Grammys.
I mean, it's interesting in that regard, because on the one hand, we always say, who cares about the Grammy Awards? But on the other hand, when they're not necessarily going where you would expect them to go, then it makes people frustrated, and it makes Kendrick Lamar frustrated.
The Grammys in particular, but all these awards, I don't think anybody, even if you press them, will say that what wins best rap album is necessarily the best rap album of that
year.
What wins best picture is not necessarily the best picture. What this serves, this is almost service journalism. This is vetting. That's what this represents. Because there are people who are busy. There are people who have kids. There are people who have jobs. And at the end of the day, they want the sense that somebody has gone through this vast sea of content and narrowed it down for them. If they have one night a month to see a movie, they want to know that movie at least has been vetted. For many of these awards, what do they actually measure? What are they actually a metric for? You could say PR. You could say, you know,
right,
the strength of your studios or your label's PR machine. Importance, getting back to something that Alex said, because that's certainly what they want to put out there.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly what the Oscars want to say. That this is important in the sense that it is shaping the zeitgeist. It's out there in the culture. This is the thing that you want to take away. Artistic merit is a thing, but I think we all agree it's not necessarily that. You could also say for the Tonys, what they offer is inspiration, particularly the Tonys, because that is kind of geared to the weird little theater boys and girls out there who want to see that this is a life, that they can do this.
Right.
It's less so because the Oscars and certainly the Grammys go wider, they're bigger.
Right.
But I think for the Tonys, it does offer that thing. And what do I want to see from a award show? For the Grammys and the Tonys, I want a live performance. Mm-hmm. That's what I want. For the Oscars and the Emmys, I want self-regard. I want bloviation. I literally want self-regard. Like that scene where the clip is playing and we cut to the scene of the celebrity in their seat staring up at the screen where they've just watched their performance, or the director just watching his film.
Uh-huh.
And I also want to see, Stephen, you'll know the Lenny.
I know exactly.
The Lenny is when you steeple your fingers and put them to your lips and you stare very intently. It's from The Simpsons. It doesn't happen much often anymore because of The Simpsons.
That's right.
I want to see awkwardness. I want to see bad banter. I want to see, you know, that's it. It's not about the wonderfulness of the live performance. On the VMAs back in 2010, there was this astonishing performance by Florence and the Machine. That's how I discovered Florence and the Machine, because the Grammys and the VMAs can tell you, you know, you can really put your finger on the pulse of what was hot a year and a half before.
Right. And partly that's the timing of the Grammys. And Stephen and I have talked about this a million times, but the Grammys are also timed so that, like, when you see that Uptown Funk is up for Record of the Year this year,
Taylor Swift's album 1989, which came out, I don't know, before my kids were born, is up for Album of the Year. And that always drives me nuts. So the Grammys in particular are egregiously a step behind because of the nature of the eligibility window. What I look for in awards shows in general is, and what I think awards shows often exist to do, is just provide a little bit of like a state of the union. Mm. And the Grammys in particular, because they're trying to go across so many genres, I always say that the Grammys don't give out awards so much as choose ambassadors. Mm-hmm. Kendrick Lamar is such a great example of that, in that, you know, he got famously snubbed a few years ago. And I said at the time, don't worry about Kendrick Lamar. Kendrick Lamar is going to win 9 million Grammys now. Sort of the way that when Metallica was snubbed, they lost the heavy metal Grammy to Jethro Tull. They gave Grammys to Metallica for absolutely everything Metallica did. Like B-sides of singles from 4-year-old albums, mm-hmm. Metallica would win Grammys for. The Grammys are always going to look like, here is the official rock star of music, you know, Dave Grohl. Here is the official rapper of music, Macklemore. No, Kendrick Lamar. And so they're going through and they're looking for, you know, for what, and you see a lot of the same performers year after year in the Grammys, where it's like, who will Long Long collaborate with this year? They're trying to put together a lot of performances that cast music in the best possible light. And you even have these moments, these stultifying moments in the Grammys where they bring out the head to come in and lecture everyone about piracy.
Right.
You know, because like they're trying to send all the messages that the music industry wants to send. And I think the Oscars are going for some of that same thing. You talked about self-regard, Glenn, but also you have a certain amount of, I want to see those Oscar clips. I want to get a sense of like, what were the major performances in the year? How will we remember this year? And what bothers me so much about the Oscars, as opposed to the Grammys, is they're really only honoring a narrow window of movies. Mm-hmm. They're not really honoring comedies. They're rarely honoring animated movies. It's largely like historical dramas. And so you're not necessarily getting a complete picture of the year in movies the way like the Tonys will have. Here is a play, here is a musical, here is the, you know, to give you a sense of how broad the spectrum of theater is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We'd be remiss to talk about award shows without mentioning Oscars So White.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Hashtag we should credit to a woman who tweets at Reign of April. It's REIGN of April, who got that hashtag underway and tweets quite a bit about movies and Broadway and such.
Sure. Yeah. So basically, like, Academy voters are overwhelmingly white.
Right.
Like, crazily, crazy white.
Right.
And so when you're talking about doing something like a State of the Union thing, like, you know, who is in the committee matters. No one in the hip-hop community would say that Coolio deserved to win over Tupac and Biggie. that year.
Right, right, right. I think that's right. And I think this is my thing, too, because the easy way to kind of deal with the obvious flaws in award shows and how silly they can seem is to sort of take that attitude of, like, look, it's a big, silly display. And every year when you see nominations come out and you see people get frustrated because they are really white or they are really whatever, you get that reaction from some people that's like, look, it's the Oscars. Who cares, right? It's always like this. But as soon as it has that sense of, like, this is the state of the union, this is kind of a snapshot of where we are, quote unquote, whether you want to, you don't have to assign it credibility to find it bothersome. Like, you don't have to actually say, I believe that this is supposed to represent the best movies, to say, putting it out there and calling it the best movies, if you aren't looking broadly across a wider spectrum than they often do of what's out there, that becomes an issue.
Well, we can talk about how important, you know, these awards are or aren't, but this is still a substantial portion of the economy surrounding these worlds. I mean, the Grammys move a lot of records. The Oscars, just Oscars speculation alone is a very lucrative industry. And if you are left out of that, as so many films are, when we talk about Oscars So White and the movies that didn't get nominated heavily for Oscars, you know, that includes like a movie like Creed, which is like a crowd-pleasing reboot of an old franchise, a movie like Straight Outta Compton, which is a little bit of like an outsider biopic that doesn't necessarily fit into the Oscars template. Like, by excluding so many genres, you are excluding a lot of people who are then excluded from this large portion of the film economy.
Right. And the Oscars would point to the fact that they're very reactive. When The Dark Knight was not nominated for an Oscar, the very next year they broadened the category so we now get as many as 10 films. That's it was intentionally done. It was called The Dark Knight Rule. It's led to some nominations that seem kind of out of left field. And now they've changed the rules for Academy membership, or at least they're going to, but that is, again, fixing last year's problem. Right. It's not building anything into the infrastructure. It's not giving opportunity where there is no opportunity now. It does feel like it's change, but it's purely reactive. There's nothing really proactive going on.
Yeah. Here. The other thing that's interesting to me is whenever you get these controversies, you get people who talk about the fact that, hey, you know, it reflects what's out there. There weren't that many movies being made that had, you know, black actors in leading roles or whatever, which is up to a point true. There are people who have gone back and located performances that could have been nominated. Very often they're in smaller movies. Mm-hmm. Then often get nominations, and that's a kind of a separate thing. But to me, if your response to that is it reflects an incredibly non-diverse field to choose from, that's not the end of the conversation. It's not like, so everything's fine. Like, no.
Our work is done here.
Then you have to still be just as, I don't know, you have to still be just as frustrated. But the other thing, too, that I was talking about with Alex earlier some, is that the Grammys in particular then place, I mean, I think a lot of the Grammys' reason for existing is the show. Whereas Stephen mentioned, they only give out like 8 or 9 of the 40,000 awards that they give out approximately. They give out 8 or 9.
Best Latin jazz instrumental duo or group.
But they come up with these combinations of, what was the one that you were telling the people who are performing?
Pitbull, Robin Thicke, and Travis Barker.
Yeah, hey. This year.
Naturally.
I like the fact that the only gig Robin Thicke can get anymore is on the Grammys.
That's true. And I mean, every once in a while, those things really pan out in an interesting way. I mean, we were talking about Kendrick Lamar. Kendrick Lamar did this thing a couple years ago with Imagine Dragons, which was like, who would have thought that would be cool? And yet it was pretty cool. But it's funny, because one of the things I'm trying to kind of wrap my head around here is, what does an ideal award show accomplish? Is there a platonic ideal of giving the award itself that is going to get you to a place where everybody feels that it's truly a full representation? Or is it really just about giving it like barely enough credibility to be a tree on which to hang a show, you know what I mean? Mm. A TV show. Because I think that's more what they do on the Grammys. Mm-hmm. But then the Oscars and the Emmys are constantly scrambling to actually put some kind of content.
A tribute to the montage.
In the television show.
Yeah.
And that's why especially with the Emmys and some of the other stuff, the only thing you ever hear about is the opening, because either the opening's good or it's not good, because then they got to go and actually give out awards, which is a really hard thing to make interesting. Do you remember the year with the Oscars that they had the thing that was like the actors would come out and they would talk about all the actresses? Like, Sandra!
Least favorite thing maybe they've ever done on awards.
Sandra, you're such a good actress.
But it is pure pure Hollywood. That is what Hollywood is. That's what I mean. That's self-regard.
You want that.
I don't want it.
That's beyond self-regard. That is just watching people kiss someone's ass for like 8 minutes. It's excruciating. And that was in lieu of the Oscar clips. You didn't actually get to see any of the performances. You know what I do like? I don't know if it's a platonic ideal, but I do like the fact that in recent years, as much as we have had very mixed feelings about how the Golden Globes have gone in you know, 1 year versus another, the Golden Globes have done a nice job in part because they're random and meaningless. They have a tendency in their television categories to reward very, very new shows and very new performers and give like kind of a nice little lift to new things that are exciting to the point where they'll just decide like Transparent year two, forget it.
Yeah.
But they'll like the Golden Globe to Rachel Bloom for Crazy Ex-Girlfriend this year. And it was like, that's a show that was like 8 episodes old on the CW.
Right. Sure.
But all of a sudden you get to see this great, charming performer.
Same thing with Jane the Virgin last
year. Jane the Virgin the previous year. I have not yet seen Mozart in the Jungle, but they clearly wanted to give a big lift to Mozart in the Jungle. And I like it when an awards show will give a real leg up. You and I, Linda, have talked about the fact that in the Grammys, the major awards often don't mean as much as the really, really minor ones that can sustain like a touring act for the rest of its career. You can get booked into clubs for the rest of your career because you won a Grammy for Best Latin Jazz Instrumental Duo or Group.
Yeah.
You are forever the Grammy
winning. Well, the funny thing is we sort of like, you chuckle at that award category just because it's long and specific, but in fact, those are often the most meaningful. Those may be the most meaningful ones in terms of the person's actual career.
Yeah, like that, like they get to have one.
Well, exactly. And but the other thing about that, though, is that if you're talking about like impacting somebody's career, if you're talking about like a bump from winning a Grammy, that's where you look at it and you're like, okay, but this Taylor Swift song, the video has 1.5 billion views on YouTube, literally.
With a B.
It's not like that's really going to help that song.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, because it does happen with movies, like with the Oscars, it helps nudge them.
But I think where it actually might help is like, you know, if you look at a band like One Direction, who are like hugely, hugely, hugely important to like millions and millions of teenagers.
Yeah.
Like their musical taste isn't necessarily worse than.
I think the Grammys are historically more hospitable to popular things to some degree than the Oscars, even to a fault. I mean, that's maybe like part of what happens with the Macklemore business and all of that stuff is the popularity of that stuff with the kind of pop audience that the Grammy sort of aligns itself with.
Sure.
You know what I mean? But anyway, I will be very excited to hear from all of you about whether you enjoy some Grammys and some Oscars and some award shows. And come and find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet at us at PCHH and let us know what you think. When we come back, we're going to switch gears and talk a little bit about brands and a little bit about product placement, except, you know, we're not going to do it ourselves. We're just going to talk about it. So come right back.
Support for Pop Culture Happy Hour and the following message comes from Stitch Fix, the online personal styling service that makes it possible for everyone to have their own personal stylist. Just fill out a style quiz to tell them your sizes, budget, and style preferences, and then schedule a date to receive your first personalized shipment. Your stylist will send you 5 hand-selected pieces of clothing with styling suggestions and outfit ideas for each piece. Choose what you want to keep and easily send back the rest with free shipping both ways. To get started, visit stitchfix.com.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. Now, before the break, we were talking about award shows. We are now going to make a sharp left, and we're going to talk a little bit about product placement. Now, when we say product placement, we're sort of speaking broadly about the intrusion of brands and brand loyalty into entertainment. And so whenever I think big picture organization of the entertainment world, I think... Glenn Weldon, you want to kick us off, buddy?
Well, let's kick off by playing devil's advocate. I mean, brands are a fact of life. Brand loyalty is a fact of life. And when you see something depicted on television in the movies where brands are not present at all, it seems weird, especially when they have to kind of create some fake brands. It's distracting. It's more distracting, arguably, than just having them there. Now, if you're aiming the camera at them, if they are as inescapable as FedEx was in Castaway, for example, which is just, it's just right down your throat. On 30 Rock, they would create U-Face, you know, for Facebook. All these, there's a whole cottage industry of creating fake names for things.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, what's the big deal is my question that I throw out there. Like a bomb.
Well, I mean, I think there is a question of whether it is a big deal. And this is where I will reveal that one of the reasons why I wanted to talk about this when Alex was here is that Alex had an episode of Pitch which talked a little bit about the Jason Aldean song, started off with a conversation about the discussion of the Jason Aldean song, Take a Little Ride. So can you explain a little bit about that situation?
Sure. So Jason Aldean recorded this song. There was a line in it where you can hear Jason Aldean say, swing by the quick stop, grab a couple Rocky Tops. Swing by the quick stop, grab a couple Rocky Tops. And so that's a reference to Coors Light, mm-hmm. right? So the problem is the original version actually said, swing by the quick stop, grab a little Shiner Bock. Swing by the quick stop, grab a little Shiner Bock, then ease on out your way to your place around 8 o'clock. So Jason Aldean sent out that original version to radio, the Shiner Bock version to radio, and then he signed a deal with Coors Light. And kind of just be like, hey, could you actually not play this version? We're going to record another version
yeah.
that says Rocky Tops. Like, they had a session where the writers actually got together and were like, oh, how can we make this rhyme now? And they just re-recorded it and sent it right back out.
Yeah.
And what was fascinating to me on that episode was that there is no sense of anything like shame. No. There's no disingenuousness. It is all, this is the way it's done. He was so matter of fact when you talk to him about it.
Yeah, no, but it's like, you know, it's basically the same thing. And you know, it's still as authentic. It feels as authentic because they're pretty much interchangeable.
They both make sense in the song, I think is the point.
Well, exactly. And there's also a certain amount of, I don't mean to besmirch the good name of Jason Aldean, but Jason Aldean's songs always sound like they're trying to sell me trucks to begin with. And I don't mean that. I don't even really mean that as a knock. It's very broad commercial music.
Right, the hook of the song is, I'm just ready to ride this Chevy.
Exactly. Yeah. And that speaks fine. That, like you were saying, Glenn, about like brands are a part of life. That doesn't necessarily ping my, oh my God, Jason Aldean has sold out.
Yeah.
You know, this indie singer-songwriter has somehow sold out.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's far from exclusive to country music. I used to joke, I mean, talk about our Grammy coverage, Linda. I remember when the Black Eyed Peas played the Grammys and I described their music as, this is the music that robots use to sell products to other robots.
Yep.
Yeah, but
like,
true.
Like, and there, you know, there's so many of these songs, and the Black Eyed Peas songs to me all sound like ads. Songs often feel like commercials anyway, but they can sound like pleasing commercials, just as commercials can incorporate songs I really, really like and use them
right.
to sell products.
One of the things that I think is interesting in Alex's episode is that this question comes up about, does it matter? And one of the reasons why it comes up whether it matters is that then every time you hear the name of a brand in a song, and this happens with me watching TV shows
totally.
All the time, every time you see one, whether it's paid for or not, it like takes you slightly out of the moment because you're like, oh, do they have a contract with them? Or is that just what they wanted to call it? Because there are like old Cole Porter songs that make references to brands. Because if you listen to the song, You're the Top, which is a Cole Porter song, there's a ton of brands in that song because they're making specific claims about the best versions of things.
Right.
In a sense, it's not disqualifying. But if you have to stop there every time and think like, oh, did the people behind the Aero collar make a deal for that? Or is that just what rhymed with the dollar?
Well,
you know?
that's important because there are certain kind of references that occur where when you refer to a brand, you are referring to a lifestyle. And if you're trying to sell the fantasy of a lifestyle, like everything in a Bond film is selling the idea of that lifestyle.
Right.
Yeah. All the stuff listed near the top, as opposed to something like the song Red Solo Cup, which is about something that exists to be relatable. Oh, I know that.
Right.
I have a Red Solo Cup. It exists to say, to capture that particular feeling in just the same way, but one's fantasy and one is right in your cupboard.
One is everyday life.
One is everyday life.
Which is exactly what you're trying to get across in that song, is the feeling of being on your porch drinking out of a Red Solo Cup. Mm-hmm. I mean, part of this, and obviously, as Linda suggested, this is not a new phenomenon, the placement of brands in song lyrics and stuff. But I also think, like, on TV shows, when we're talking about product placements, I mean, at some point, there is a price to pay for always getting to skip the commercials, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're always trying to get out of paying our debt, like paying the price for the things that we watch and, you know, and listen to. And if we're not buying the records, and if we're not watching the commercials, at some point, people got to get paid.
Right.
And
no,
so,
it's true.
And so on TV shows, especially, I'm actually surprised that one of the side effects of DVRs is that we don't see ads just crawl, just like a crawl at the bottom of screens during a show. You know, and certainly in reality shows, and I mean, sports, of course, do it like crazy. But like reality shows will often like, now all the Big Brother house guests will watch a scene from the new movie, you know, the CBS drama.
Yeah. When they made the people, when they, as a reward, took the people from Survivor to the Adam Sandler movie, Jack and Jill. There is an amazing scene where you can see this one woman watching that movie, clearly wanting to die while watching that movie. It is an amazing scene. But one of the things that they are doing is they are finding more and more, and in some cases, more and more graceless ways to incorporate this kind of stuff. I gave Jessica a clip that is one of my personal favorites from How This Began to Invade the Daytime Drama.
Ooh.
This is a clip of Bo and Hope from Days of Our Lives, who have been in love since I was a child, having an important conversation about the status of their love affair.
Cheerios?
Oh, yeah, things have been so crazy I haven't had a chance to tell you. A physical the other day, the doc said I have to watch my diet, so I was doing some reading, and studies show that eating Cheerios can lower your cholesterol, so I'm going to give it a shot.
Sounds great to me. But, you know, you didn't have to buy them. This year, you're my favorite. I always keep these in stock in the banana nut.
I always keep these in stock in the banana nut. I love that clip so much. And the thing that's interesting is that's so bizarre to be. And it actually got a lot of attention when they first started doing those. They did a whole thing with Cheerios. People talked about it a lot. But there are other times when the more blatant it is, the more people kind of are willing to accept it.
Yeah.
When the show Chuck, that starred Zachary Levi, it was very beloved by a small group of a small audience. And as they were constantly threatening to cancel it, this thing came along where Subway started to sponsor it, along with, I think, a lot of other stuff that was on NBC. And the fans decided that Subway was their friend because it was saving their little tiny show. And there got to be this very symbiotic relationship between super fans of Chuck and how much they loved Subway for helping save Chuck. So you could put as much Subway stuff in there as you wanted, because every time the fans saw it, they were like, woo, Subway, they're keeping my show on the air. There was a special deal with Subway. I don't know.
Yeah, well, it's funny, like, in terms of, like, blatant, ridiculous product placements that work, I think probably the best example would be DJ Khaled and Ciroc Apple. if you're not familiar with DJ Khaled, he is, he's a hip-hop producer and, like, a huge social media star. He's probably, like, the biggest Snapchat star out there. I think his snaps get something like 2 million views each, which is insane. And, like, his Snapchat is, like, the most ridiculous, crazy, like, just inside look at DJ Khaled's unbelievably absurd, ridiculous Miami life, where he hangs out with, like, Dwayne Wade and, like, gets massages with, like, I don't know. It's just the most ridiculous, amazing thing.
Alex really likes DJ Khaled.
I love DJ Khaled.
Snapchat.
And part of it is, like, the fact that, you know, we get to see this ridiculous life. Part of it is the fact that, like, he does the same things kind of over and over again, almost like a sitcom. And the way that product placement works its way into it is because it seems like he kind of has a deal with Ciroc Apple, which is, like, Diddy's, like, vodka brand. Probably my favorite DJ Khaled thing ever was
very
when
high honor.
Yeah. Oh my god. So DJ Khaled loves jet skiing. and so one day he decided to jet ski over to Diddy's house.
I need all my people to tweet Diddy, Puff Daddy, tweet him. Tell him I need some Apple Ciroc on the yacht. We about to pull up to his crib.
All right, and so people tweet at Diddy. People tweet at Diddy. Diddy comes out of the house with some Ciroc.
And you're seeing this on Snapchat.
You see this all on Snapchat in like 10-second bursts. And one of like DJ Khaled. So DJ Khaled has a bunch of like, you know, catchphrases. And one of them is Ciroc Apple, celebrate success right the only way. And so they're just doing like these different... They're doing like these different like versions of that. They somehow end up on their yacht. I don't know. You just can you play this clip?
Yes, celebrate with success.
Celebrate success, right.
Look at success.
The only way.
Daddy.
Woo. Daddy on the yacht, jumped out from his crib right in the backyard.
Yeah, that's no cloth. I mean, you gotta have a dock to pull up the yacht.
A special cloth.
I feel like the veil has been pulled back.
Yeah.
So, I feel like I'm getting an up close and personal look at Diddy's yacht.
But let me actually tell you, first of all, it's just generally hilarious. But like, that stuff works. Like, it actually,
sure.
The product placement works. I can tell you two specific examples. One of them,
you,
I was
Alex Kappelman, bought a bottle of...
Well, so, like, I was at, I was eating dinner at a restaurant, and, like, two women pulled out a bottle of Chirac Apple, and I started talking to the person I was with, and I was like, oh, they have Chirac Apple, and I started saying, like, Khaled, like, catchphrases, and they turn around, they're like, oh, we're celebrating success, right, the only way. We just started talking about DJ Khaled. Like, they clearly had bought it because of Khaled. And Pitch just opened up a new office, and one of my office warming presents was two bottles of Chirac Apple. So me and my co-producer, Whitney Jones, could celebrate success, right, the only way. Chirac Apple.
All right, I also have an example, a classic example. Won't beat that, but Jess, can you hit me one time?
Can I persuade you to take a sandwich with you, sir?
I'll get drive through.
There we go. That is from 1995's Batman Forever. That's Val Kilmer saying it's the first scene of that film that was later turned into a McDonald's commercial to sell a McDonald's drive through. As I mention in my book, The Cape Crusade, The Rise of Pop Culture. See, I placed a product
you just did
in
that.
The product placement thing. I just opened up a riff
coming
in space
March
time.
22nd.
Coming March 22nd. I talk about how McDonald's was really up in arms because in 1992, in Batman Returns, there was a Happy Meal campaign with that movie. But if you remember that movie was kind of twisted, mm-hmm. a little kinky. Mm-hmm. And parents complained because it was so dark and because there was like a Catwoman in like a fetish gimp suit, basically, in their children's Happy Meal. So they were forced to pull that campaign. And when it came time for Batman Forever, they got the permission. The studio basically showed McDonald's the script to get them approval before the film was actually shot. So when there's any kind of a disconnect, even a perceived disconnect between the property mm-hmm. and the product that's placed in it.
Right.
That's when all kinds of things can go weird. And that's when it really comes out in sharp relief.
Right. I think the funny thing about it to me is what makes these kinds of things okay tends to be joy. And I don't know if you can tell, but Alex gets a lot of joy out of DJ Khaled talking about Chirac Apple. There is a certain kind of, and that's what I get from listening to it, is like it's sort of a fun, joyful thing. Mm-hmm. Whereas in that Days of Our Lives clip, you have the sense of people
just wrote.
Like you truly, you just have the sense of people who are basically being held hostage.
Right.
And that's about how cheerful they seem to feel about it. Whereas, you know, when you're throwing it in some kind of fun or whimsical, and that, again, I would go back to the Chuck example. I think they mm-hmm. did that stuff on Chuck. There are ones where you don't necessarily notice it that much, because when I later read that the office, the U.S. office, had not only a product placement deal with Staples, which was the primary competitor of Dunder Mifflin, and so they would show Staples stuff all the time as the competitor
they
and talk
about
them.
Even set episodes in Staples.
As the competitor, but also had a deal with Call of Duty, which there was a whole episode mm-hmm. where they were playing Call of Duty. And it's like, it makes sense in retrospect. It made sense that boss and those guys were playing Call of Duty. And so if you could do it in an artful way with a little joy... Not maybe as much joy as DJ Khaled, but, you know.
It's impossible to bring as much joy as DJ Khaled's Snapchat.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I don't know.
And what does Batman eat at McDonald's? Come on. Seriously.
Well, you have to admit it would be a very big moment for the person working the drive-thru.
True.
Window,
it's true.
When Batman came up. Uh-huh. All right. Again, I will be excited to hear what all of you think about product placement and product placement in songs. And you should listen to that episode of Pitch. It's called Take a Little Ride with Coors Light. And again, you can find it wherever you get your podcasts. When we come back, it is going to be time for our favorite segment of this week and every week. What is making us happy this week? So come right back.
Support for this podcast and the following message comes from IMG, presenting Academy Award-winning director Michael Moore's newest film, Where to Invade Next, a provocative and subversive comedy about finding solutions to America's problems in unlikely places. Where to Invade Next is coming to theaters just in time for election season. See it at a theater near you Friday, February 12th, and visit wheretoinvadenext.com for more details.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It is time for our favorite segment, What is Making Us Happy This Week? Stephen Thompson, what is making you happy this week?
Linda, you and I will be live tweeting the Grammy Awards,
which
we talked about at the top of this show.
That's right.
Follow us on Twitter if you don't already. That is the way that people have fun watching the Grammy Awards.
It's true.
By making comments on them. And of course, the thing that dominates my life this and every year that I have not mentioned this year until now is that we are 2.5 weeks away from this year's Austin 100. Please, please, when the time comes, download the thing. It is so much work. I'm pulling together 100 songs from the South by Southwest. Don't you miss me talking about this?
Like crazy, buddy.
Swallows returning to Capistrano.
But soon enough, yet again, you will be able to download 100 free MP3s for your listening pleasure. And I'm putting that together now. And the songs are great.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Stephen Thompson. Glenn Weldon, what is making you happy this week?
Deadpool, which is interesting in as much as it is the first R-rated superhero film, really, that's getting the kind of mainstream attention. It is a 1994 Image comic brought to life with all that that entails.
Mm-hmm.
And it is violent, but it's got some good jokes. I was surprised by that because this character lives or dies by how funny he is or isn't. Now, 80% of the jokes in this film are actually not jokes, they're references.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of the Family Guy model.
Mm-hmm.
But whoever did punch up on this script, and because the character wears a mask most of the time and you don't see his mouth, they could just keep throwing jokes in. And they did. So I have, it's still evil. I'm not going to say it's not evil and degenerate and cynical, but some good jokes. And finally, tomorrow I go in to start recording the audiobook of The Caped Crusade, Batman and the Rise of Nerd Culture, which comes out March 22nd. I don't know when the audiobook will come out, but I am looking forward to that. Going to have a little bit of fun.
Yeah.
Talk to my producer. Yeah.
Yeah.
It turns out, for example, just throw this out by way of example, that one of the guys I quote in this book quite a lot is a man by the name of Dr. Frederick Wortham, who was a anti-comics crusader in the 40s and 50s. My research shows that he, quote, never lost his thick German accent. So I was just going to say, just going to have a little fun.
Oh, boy.
Put it this way. I'm going to have some fun. It might turn out to be very annoying and distracting, but I'm going to have some fun.
All right. Very good. Thank you, Glenn Weldon. Alex Kappelman, what is making you happy this week, buddy?
Sia recently released her album, This Is Acting, and I'm like the biggest Sia fan in the entire world. I love her. I was really worried about her following up her previous album, which I basically just listened to over and over and over and over and over again. And she released this album, and I'm listening to it over and over and over and over again. Interesting thing for me is that like her previous album was very sad. Like a lot of the lyrics were just kind of sad. And now she's gotten a lot of success from that album.
Mm-hmm.
And the album seems to be like kind of happy and uplifting. And it's like I've been starting my days just like listening to different songs. Like, yes, I am unstoppable. I can do this.
Yeah, thanks, dude. So what is making me happy this week? I watched a 30 for 30 documentary from ESPN about the 85 Bears. The other day, which Steven's making noises because he's not a big Bears guy.
Oh my God.
But it is a documentary about the 85 Bears that still the only championship they've ever won.
Only championship they've ever won. The only thing they ever talk about.
Yes, yes, yes. The pivot point for this documentary about this 85 football team is Buddy Ryan, who was their defensive coordinator and later became the head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles, which is what I knew him from is when he was the coach of the Eagles. They essentially open this story with the defense of the Bears at the time writing a letter essentially to the management, to the bosses, insisting that Buddy Ryan be retained when the head coach was being let go. Essentially, the guys in the defense, the players, wrote this letter saying, saying there's nothing wrong with the defense. The defense is fine. It's your offense. So don't fire the defensive coordinator. We really need him and rely on him and we love him. And so partly as a result of that, the management retained him and he stayed with the team for a period of time, for long enough to win that championship. That happened in like, I want to say 82-ish. And stayed long enough for them to win that championship. And then late in the documentary, they visit with Buddy Ryan, who now has a lot of health issues and is cared for by somebody and isn't able to talk in the documentary. but they spend some time with him and they facilitate some communication with him and these players who made this gesture for him, and they loved him so much. And it turns into this story about this coach and these guys. And there's a lot of stuff in it. I mean, they touch on Jim McMahon and some spinal issues that he has had and some medical stuff.
A lot of medical
There's
issues.
A ton of stuff packed into this documentary. It's really interesting. The 30 for 30 docs are kind of all over the place. The one, anybody who knows me knows that the one about Reggie Miller and the Knicks is my favorite sports documentary of all time. Alex is in pain because of the Knicks. But they're a little bit all over the place. And this is one that I really, really liked. So again, it's called The 85 Bears. I'm sure that they are rerunning it and that you can find it around. It's a 30 for 30 documentary from ESPN. And that is what is making me happy this week. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow me at NPR Monkey C. You can follow Steven at I Dislike Steven. You can follow Glenn at GH Weldon and Alex at Alex Kapelman. That's K-A-P-E-L-M-A-N. You can follow our producer, Jessica Reedy at Jessica_Reedy, and our producer emeritus and music director, Mike Katziff at Mike Katziff, K-A-T-Z-I-F. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in and out music, which you are bobbing your head to right now. So thanks to all of you guys for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you, Linda.
And thanks to all of you for listening, and we will see you right back here next week.
Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour. Check out NPR's Bullseye with Jesse Thorne, an excellent guide to what's good in pop culture. Every week, Jesse Thorne interviews people like Elvis Costello, Elizabeth Banks, and Spike Lee about their creative work and lives. Find your new favorite TV shows, books, movies, and music, and gain new insights into the things you already love. Find Bullseye now at npr.org/podcasts and on the NPR One app.